accession number 27227, reel 1.
Captain Hoth, reel 1. Can you tell me where and when you were born, please?
On 12th of February at Epsom, and on 1919.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was an engineer.
Did he work, was he a specific type of engineer?
Yes, railway engineer.
And what about your education? What did you do?
I went to Dartmouth, actually. I went to Dartmouth in 1932, finished there in 1936. Then I, after doing the training ship, I went to Kiam for another, I was there only 10 terms, and I left in April 40.
Can I ask you a little bit about Dartmouth, how it was organised in the 1930s?
How do you mean?
Did you go as a naval cadet?
A naval cadet, yes, certainly. It's well known what it was like, isn't it?
Well, there's a little bit. There's very few people who've been there. But I was wondering, did you have any technical instruction?
Oh, yes, yes. Engineering was one of the subjects that we studied. It was, of course, mainly for executive officers. But I was going to be an engineer the whole time.
How did the instruction take place? Where did it take place, and what was the kind of?
There was a place down by the river called Sankey, where they had all the workshops, and sort of learned from down there. We did all the sort of usual things, chewing and filing the scraping and so on, so that was about it.
Had you been involved in any form of engineering prior to going to Dartmouth?
Well, I'm not involved in it, but I'd always been interested in it. It was always what I was interested in.
That sort of thing.
Yes.
Did you find it useful, the training you received at Dartmouth in the engineering?
Oh yes, yes, it was very sound. It was a good introduction. I was the only member of my term who became an engineer, but. The other terms had more engineers in them.
And you say you started, would you have started from a very basic level and worked your way up within the engineering kind of training? Would they have taught you a very basic kind of skills to start with?
I suppose so, yes. I've always been interested in engineering, though.
So was that a pleasurable experience for you?
Very pleasurable, yes, certainly.
So you're saying once you left Dartmouth, what was the next move?
Well, after training ship, I went to Kiam, Royal Naval Engineering College at Devonport, and I was there for 10 terms, and there was a proper engineering training then.
Could you outline the kind of the training that takes place there when you visit?
Well, it was really a complete engineering course. All aspects. Of course, we were directed mainly towards marine engineering, but we did a lot of metallurgy and thermodynamics, everything, you know. It was really a university course in engineering. It was rather good. I didn't realise it at the time.
You say was it thorough then in its breadth?
Yes, I think so. For what it was aiming to do, turn out engineers for the Navy, engineer officers for the Navy.
And are there any kind of specialist skills an engineering officer in the Navy needs that might be slightly different from other engineering engineers?
Well, not really, except you had to be more familiar with the sea and what that involves. But it's the same, it's mechanical engineering, really.
So are you dealing with a ship's engines?
Yes. At that time, I was dealing really purely with ship's engines.
What type of engines would most of the vessels have had?
Well, they're turbine drives. Well, it depends on the type of vessel, of course. But warships had geared turbines, steam turbines. What more need I say?
And what would be the projected role of an engineering officer be? And how does that fit within the structure of a ship?
Well, you deal with the engineering aspects of the ship. After all, the ship is very much a piece of engineering, actually. And I had to deal with the main machinery of the ship, that sort of thing, and all the auxiliary machinery and so on. That was what a practical job was. But we were broader educated than that. We'd had the thermodynamics and all that sort of thing.
And who would you have had working for you underneath in the engineering branch?
We had engine raft officers. They were the skilled workmen, and then below that there were they're known as stokers, stoker mechanics, that was very more nickname, but they were stokers. And they provided sort of the bulk of the people.
Would they be obviously less skilled than the engine artificers?
Oh yes, the engine artificers had a proper training in engineering skills. Most of them were fitters and turners, but there were sort of blacksmiths and coppersmiths and so on. They covered all trades necessary.
And I take it with the stokers, they originally, well, their origins were with the coal-driven ships.
Yes, so of course the stokers I dealt with, none of them had served in coal-driven ships. The name stuck when they turned over to oil.
And what would they do within the system? Would they be unskilled?
They were largely unskilled. Well, they had to know quite a lot about it. They had to know how to use the machinery and so on. A chief stoker knows quite a lot.
Would they need much supervision?
Oh, yes, I think so. Well, it depends. Some of them they did, some didn't.
As you finished your course, was it 1940?
Yes, April 40.
How had you felt on hearing of the outbreak of war, obviously, in September 1939?
It was very what we'd been expecting, actually. And I just went on to the end of the course and then I went to sea.
And were there any major changes on the course that the outbreak, was it shortened or was it...
The course actually remained fixed length the whole war. They didn't shorten it at all. But of course, a lot of engineers came in from outside who were...
You sound very much like you got the thorough grounding that you're explaining there. Who was instructing you on that course?
A mixed bag. Some civilians. The professor of intelligence was a civilian, and some engineers, and we were taught mathematics by civilians and so on. The mixed bag.
And what kind of length of day would you do? Would you do a kind of full day of instruction, or would it be a divided day? Would you have some sort of lectures and then followed by practical?
It was mixed up, both. We had some practical in the workshops and some was theoretical up top. It was a broad. Thing really.
And at the end of the course, did you feel fully equipped for what your potential duties
were?
Well,
I hoped I was, yes.
Was that the same sort of, would you say that was the same feeling amongst most of your brothers?
I think so, yes.
Were you looking forward to getting to see at that?
Yes, certainly I was. Certainly I was.
Because it's a long period of training you had.
It's three and two thirds, yeah. It's 11 terms it was actually, but I went in at the second. They had every other term, they had a term at SOS, and I went in and missed one term. It didn't matter, I caught up all right.
And what was the first ship that you joined?
Renown.
And where was she when you joined?
She was at Rosyth. She just had an engagement with the Scharnhorst and Eisenhower.
Could you give me a thumbnail sketch of the Renown, what she was like as a...
She was a battle cruiser, six 13-inch guns, and 4.5-inch between deck mounting of for anti-aircraft fire. I must say the anti-aircraft fire was pretty terrible.
Could she put up a very good anti-aircraft barrage?
It was fairly useless, I think, actually. I don't know if we ever shot anything down.
For people who've not been on board a ship when the anti-aircraft fire, is it a very noisy experience?
It's a noisy experience, yes.
Does the ship feel the impact of so many guns being fired at once?
Well, not the 4.5s, but of course when the 15-inch guns fire, you knew that all right. That's quite different.
Could they cause damage to equipment within the ship when they fired?
No, I don't. Not really. No, they didn't. There were certain restrictions on the angle at which the 15-inch could fire. She couldn't fire straight over the bows, for example. But that was only a restriction.
What was her complement like of crew?
She was about 800.
And within that, you obviously went into the engineering branch, yes. But how many men would be in the engineering branch?
About 150, I think, all told.
And where were you accommodated on board?
I started off by having to sleep in a hammock, actually. but I got a cabin later.
Sleeping in a hammock? Where did you do that then?
Well, it was in the catapult of compartment, actually. We were somewhat crowded in the ship, and I was only in a third unit at that time.
And had you slept in a hammock before this?
I had, actually, yes. We were in the training ship.
Is there a technique at all for sleeping in a hammock? Because most people have never slept in one. Is it getting into it?
It's quite a job to... there is a bit of technique, but it's not difficult.
Do you have to swing into it rather than climb into it, would you say?
Well, I don't know. You had to swing into it, yes, I think so.
And on board, what were your initial duties?
Initially I got the boats, actually. I had to look after all the ship's boats.
How many boats would Renown have had?
She had about six, I think, as a two launches. I think it's about six motorboats, that is.
What were they used for?
Oh, going ashore. I mean, in general use, sort of bringing things offshore, liberty men ashore, so on.
And what type of engines would they have had?
They're both petrol, some are petrol. Motorboats were petrol, actually. They're a bit of a menace, the petrol. And the rest were diesel.
And was it easy to get spare parts or maintain them? I
had my problems with them, actually, but... we were fairly well off for spares. I had an awful trouble with breakage of valve springs. I followed that up when I went later to Greenwich, and the reason was quite simple, that there was the salt in the atmosphere was corroding them and causing corrosion fatigue.
Was that generally a problem with parts of the engineering of a ship, salt corrosion?
Salt corrosion was a problem, but it was on the whole fairly well understood. The main machinery didn't suffer very much. The trouble with the boats was that they had sort of engines which had come from outside the Navy, and they weren't used to the conditions they were operating under.
And obviously, these were your initial duties. Did you have anybody to help you in those duties?
Well, one ERA and the stokers. There was a stoker for each boat, about four stokers.
Would they? Who would pilot the boats?
Oh, some sort of seaman. A seaman would do it. The stokers mainly drove the boat, drove the machinery. The ERA, of course, looked after all the bits that have gone wrong and so forth. He had a fairly full time of it too.
Would you have had a workshop to work on the machine?
Well, yes, we had the main workshop of the ship, but we had a little hole that was where the maintenance, the medbirds went on.
And what type of equipment did you have in there? Was it a fully equipped workshop, or was it?
The main workshop was well equipped. We only used our little workshop for the boats just for assembly of the engines and so on.
And apart from the valves going with that, was there any other problems that the boats had at all while you were?
I don't think so particularly. Some of the boats were all right. The launches were okay, but the motor boats weren't.
And that was your initial duty. Did you move on to further duties?
Yes, I then got of all jobs, refrigerators. that was an absolute menace actually, because they're very old fashioned CO2 refrigerators, and they caused a lot of trouble.
What were the refrigerators used for on board ship?
For storing meat mainly, that sort of thing. The cold rooms.
So it was food for the crew.
Yeah, that's right.
And can you describe how the refrigerators worked in there? Because I know people who've never seen that kind of refrigerator on board of that ship.
Oh, well, you won't have seen a carbon dioxide refrigerator, I'm sure. But they were straightforward. Compressor, you know, pressure condenser and so forth, and they worked more or less, but gosh, being carbon dioxide, they had to work, the working pressure was over 1,000 pounds a square inch, and that caused some trouble.
How did that trouble manifest itself?
Well, it didn't work. we were having to take them down one at a time and deal with them.
Because I imagine it was quite an important job, because no refrigerators, Yes, it was,
but there were, I think, about four refrigerating machines. We sort of kept going. I never had to discard the entire lot of meat in the ship. And it's not true about some other ships who had trouble with them.
Because I assume that if that had gone down, the operational capacity of the ship would have been very limited.
Well, they didn't use dry food and so forth, but I don't think it ever affected the fighting efficiency of the ship.
How big were they, these refrigerators within the ship?
Well, they are quite large, they stood the full height of the deck, about 6 or 7 feet high, but the cold rooms, of course, are quite large compartments.
Could they contain a large amount of meat?
Oh, yes, tons and tons of it. Well, I mean, you've got to... We had probably about 90 days stores or something of that sort. And that's quite a lot of meat.
And again, who did you have in your team to look after the refrigerators?
An ERA and part-time, and the stokers drive them.
So if something went wrong, would it be? Would you then be called in, or would you be always keeping an overview of?
I was keeping an eye on things the whole time, but we didn't need to be told when something went wrong. We knew it.
How would you get to hear?
Well, there'd be a cry of so-and-so was happening.
And would somebody keep it? Would one of the stokers or the AR? Would they keep a kind of daily maintenance on these, the refrigerators? Would the refrigerators need that?
Yes, not much actually. There wasn't much you could do. You just sort of looked at them. They kept a log on them, of course.
And would that?
But that gave you the history of what happened.
So was there, after refrigerators, did you move on again to another?
Yes, I became a damage control officer of the second damage control officer of the ship. And that was really sort of looking at helping up the double bottoms and so forth. And that about concludes my career in Renown.
Could you explain to me what a damage control officer does?
He basically looks after the he's responsible for a number of things. He's responsible for watertight security and so forth. He's responsible for the stability of the ship. He's responsible for organising all the things. I must emphasise, Renan is only assistant damage control officer. What else is there?
Well, would you make an assessment within the ship of how to deal with damage in certain areas, or was it laid down?
No, you're very much on our own, actually. It's very difficult to predict what's going to happen, quite honestly. But you sort of familiarise yourself with the various systems, both mechanical and electrical, and sort of then sort of wait for something to happen.
Am I right in thinking it was a relatively new role when you'd...
Damage control officer was fairly new, yes.
So was there any instruction manuals or anything like that at that stage when you were kind of doing...
No, not really, although there was quite a lot of sort of stuff that we'd picked up and so forth.
Did you have responsibility for a certain area of the ship, or was it across the board as an assistant?
Well, I had responsibility for... I was one of the damage control officers. You always had one officer on damage control. I was actually in... had a section of the ship. The driving four sections. I was actually on... there's a forecastle, foretop, main top and quarterdeck. I was on in the foretop section. So I knew that one fairly well.
So what did that area encompass on the Renown?
The section abreast of the boiler rooms, really.
If the ship had received damage in your area, say from an air attack or a bomb of some sort, would there have been any plans that you'd foreseen to put in place that would have... Would it be a continual assessment of such a...
Much the latter, because you can't predict what's going to happen.
So there's an awful lot of thinking on your feet, I believe,
with that. Well, yes, and knowledge, general knowledge. You have to know the systems and what there is.
If potentially the ship had been hit, what would you have done at that time? Would you then have roamed around the ship in the area that you had responsibility for to assess the situation, or would you have...
Assess the situation, yes. We did actually have a gun accident whilst I was on board. One of the four fires, unfortunately, the stops that stopped training had sort of got a bit easier, and one 4-5 fired about three shells through the next turret, which killed everybody in it, and that was an occurrence, really.
So what happened when that occurred for a damage control?
Well, not really damage control. It was really up to the ordnance engineers to sort that one, and I just sort of watched with interest.
Did that give you an indication of what damage could occur to a ship, say from a shell fire at all? Because I was wondering...
No, not really. It was a straightforward accident that very disquieting, because it shouldn't have been possible. But it was. It happened.
I was thinking along those lines with damage control. Did you have any knowledge of what damage could occur to a ship, or how a ship reacts to various damage at that stage?
Yes. The main thing, perhaps, where you had knowledge was on the stability of the ship, what kept it upright, and that involved knowing quite a bit, actually.
We'd say the ship like the Renown, if the ship had, say, been torpedoed and there was damage within the ship, How can you maintain stability within such a large vessel?
Well, it depends really what's happened. It's a large question. The main thing you've got to worry about is free surface of water. That eats up your stability like nobody's business. If you haven't got any free surface, then you're probably, it just means list and there's no problem.
Could a ship like the Renown take quite a lot of damage before it would be in the stability we're going to, it would be prone to sinking?
Yes. I think Renown was, in retrospect, it was not as good as it could have been. It wasn't designed as well as it could have been. But it was all right.
And what were perceived as the main threats in that period when you joined in 1940?
Submarine attack, torpedoes, and meeting a surface ship. That happened very, very rarely.
Was air attack at that stage of the war really considered a
threat? It was considered a threat. Air attack was. But we were not up against the Germans largely. We were up against the Italians, and they were fairly useless.
I just say, operationally, where did you go with the Renown? Because obviously,
a Mediterranean.
Did you sail there directly after joining the ship?
Fairly soon after joining the ship, we were in Force H, based on Gibraltar, and we operated there for about a year.
And what were your main duties with Force H?
We just went out on whatever operations were going on.
Could you tell me some of the operations that you went on?
We bombarded Genoa once, and we were with Malaya when that was done. We ran several convoys through to Malta. We were somewhat passive. We fired our anti-aircraft guns, of course, but there wasn't any surface ships, and we almost got into contact with the Italians at the Battle of Cape Spartivento, which probably never even heard of. But they were faster than us, and they ran away.
During actions, did you have an action station aboard the ship?
Yes. I was in the second section in from the forecastle. That's my action station.
And could you see anything from where?
No, right between days.
And was that really a case of waiting for damage to occur?
Yes, just sort of sitting waiting something to happen. Yes.
And you said initially when you'd got on board you were in a hammock. Did you move your location?
Yes, I got a cabin in there.
And was that a personal cabin or did you share?
No, perhaps better be explained. It was a cabin I couldn't sleep in at sea because it was after the X turret and the only access was from before that, and they didn't like to have anybody sleeping down aft. So I had to sleep in we had a large room which used as a dormitory, and all slept in that on camp beds.
What was the atmosphere like aboard Renown as a ship? Was she a happy ship?
Oh, I think so, yes.
Was the crew all?
Yes, no trouble at all.
Were there any incidents that you can remember while you were on Renown? Any problems that you came up against, engineering problems that spring to mind that you solved?
Not that I solved. We had the one trouble, of course, was the actual vibration of the shafts. And when we did a turn, we had to ease up on the inner propellers. You probably heard of that business. It was common in all those ships at the time. But there wasn't anything we knew what to do, and that was just a matter of routine. When you're travelling along, and when you did a turn, you had to ease up on the inner shafts.
Almost in a sense, in the same way you would turn a car, in a sense, from there.
Well, not altogether, because the trouble was that what was happening was that the shafts were being excited actually by the propeller propulsion near the hull, and that there was a variable forward force, and that was causing actual vibration.
How did that affect the ship's performance at all?
Not to notice. We knew of it and dealt with it. One trouble Renan did have, though, was she had trouble with her bulges, that they'd been added as an afterthought, and they kept peeling off a bit. I mean, I had to sort of duck in a hurry at a jib several times to stick them back on again.